RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
It's time for our semi-regular chat with the Fat Emperor, problem solver, commentator, Ivor Cummins. Ivor, welcome to the show. Where are you beaming in from today? Can you tell us?
Oh, yeah. Hi there, Paul. No, just back in Dublin, Ireland.
Oh, back in Dublin. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Plenty to talk about. Trump. All right. I've just been watching a little bit of an interview you've done with Michael Yon, which is up on Vimeo. I'm watching it on. I haven't had the time to go through the whole thing, but one thing that jumped out, first of all, who is Michael Yon?
Yeah, Michael Yon. I met him in Buenos Aires there last week. I was over at a Maverick conference, my fifth this year, actually. Interesting crew. But Michael Yon is a Green Beret, former soldier. He's America's most, I suppose, most celebrated war correspondent, Iraq, Iran, the whole lot, you know. And he's just a military expert and has been specializing for many years now on looking at the kind of global chess game that we've talked about before, you know, the probability of war. As he stated in the interview, we're in third generation warfare now. We are in World War III. And yes, it's not kinetic, but we are pretty deeply into World War III. It's just a new style of war, post-nuclear weapons. It's all information warfare. And he's a very interesting guy. He takes a very militaristic, very precise view of the world. And he has a somewhat negative view, perhaps more than myself or the other interviewer, but very revealing stuff he comes up with.
Yeah, because he, you know, speaking to Trump winning, he used the word installed.
Yeah. So, look, there's a lot of good people, even Dr. Jakob Nordenberg, we talked about before, who is utterly rooted in fully referenced science. He's extremely careful. But even he takes that view that, you know, Trump and even Musk to an extent and many more, they are part of the system. Now, they might not like some parts of what the system wants, you know, like Musk really likes free speech. That's genuine. Trump really likes a lot of what he talks about. He wants America back the way it was. But at the end of the day, they are connected and they couldn't operate without being somewhat subservient to the masters. And I guess that's the point that these people make. They're not truly independent. They may have some of our interests at heart, you know, because they've got strong personal opinions on things, but they kind of have to kowtow at the same time. They're kind of connected into the system.
I'm interested to hear about Argentina because I read just in the last 24 hours or so from this chat that they've had their first, I think, budget surplus, the government there, in some huge amount of years. And he seems, Javier Milei, seems to be turning things around. That must be catching the attention of many people.
Yeah, Milei is doing a good job. And again, there's the same kind of thing about, is he fully legitimate or is he kowtowing as well to the big boys? Now, he did go with the dollar. He didn't try to risk his position and his country, to be quite frank, by going some other route with BRICS and all. But you know what? You could see that as pragmatism. He can't go up against the American hegemony. He really does want to rebuild the country. He wants to strip out the public service, and he's certainly doing that. He's doing a great job, but he's doffing his cap to the USA and the State Department, which you could say, even if I were in his position, I'd choose to do the same. Because, you know, you can worry later about going a different way, but right now you're going to get crushed if you go against the machine. But yeah, great job. Fascinating to see. For people listening, what struck me most was it was like being in Europe. So I went on a 28-hour journey total via the US, got to Buenos Aires, and I thought, wow, this is like kind of like a European city. You know, it's a bit more, you know, garbage smell and poor country, but there were no mass immigration. I mean, looking around you, you could be in a European city. It's astonishing. And then the guys told me, including Michael Yon, they said, Argentina, particularly Buenos Aires, where most of the people in Argentina are, it's 90% European ancestry.
Yeah,
I didn't know that. So we are told all this stuff about Venezuela, South America, you know, Argentina. The State Department's been starting proxy wars in all these countries and crushing South America for 40 years. And we're all given the impression that it's kind of one big toilet. And it's not. In fact, quite the opposite. They don't have much money. But another key point that was made by Jan and by the other people I interviewed, it's good that Argentina has money troubles. And the Falklands War, while terrible, finished off their military. And no one's interested in funding military now. They have bugger all. So because they have very little money, they can't create the bureaucratic, technocratic surveillance state. I mean, houses are bought and sold with cash. People don't obey government orders. Argentina brought in lockdowns and masks, and everyone just ignored it. Yeah, you know, so you go there, no mass immigration, feels European, super cheap economy, zero tax on foreign income if you get set up right, and a really nice climate, incredible food security, one of the lowest population densities in the world. And it's thousands of miles away from the madness or World War III nuclear or anything else that can go on in this world. They skipped World War I. They skipped World War II. And the word is out now from some senior lawyers there we had talks from that members of Congress and other high-powered individuals are beginning to set up citizenship there and acquire property. Could we have it again, like World War I, World War II? Could we have it again where people who are in the know sneak off somewhere nice to sit it out?
Well, a lot of Nazis on the run went there.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. And that's one of the reasons why is obviously the European ancestry, everything else I described, probably not too dissimilar back in the 40s. Argentina won't play ball with the Western powers. That's another advantage. And yeah, unfortunately, in this case, the Nazis, and now the Roman Catholic Church, it's pretty well documented, they had the rat run. So the Roman Catholic Church helped a lot of big Nazis get down there.
Going back to information war versus kinetic war, at some point that information war becomes a kinetic war, right? I mean, that's just the logical progression. Do you think, or is information winning an information war enough now without having to fire weapons?
Yeah, it's kind of, there's a bit of hybrid because they do love their proxy wars, Paul, don't they? They love their wars because
it's fair to say
all their buddies in the military industrial complex who are up to their neck in the State Department, CIA, blah, blah, blah. They need to feed at the trough too. And also proxy wars destabilize other countries. Now, they've been doing it in South America for, like I said, 40 years. They've been after Russia, like, I don't know what, for the last 20 years. The propaganda we hear in the West about Russia and Putin is surreal. And they want wars in other jurisdictions because it's destabilizing. And also, wars fuel another key strategy they have, the Kalergi plan, to have mass immigration into Europe and the West, and to dumb down the population and basically destabilize societies so they can rule over them better. Well, there's nothing better than wars as an excuse and as a driver for mass migration. So there's so many benefits to proxy wars. That's why they have them all going on all over the place. And as Michael Young pointed out, Iran is a jewel for military strategic reasons, access to energy and the straits they control. So they're really gunning for Iran. But to your bigger question, full board war, I don't think so, because I think that even the worst of the neocons and the worst of the war hawks in this system, they still know that nuclear war doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So I realistically, I don't think that'll happen. You'll have continuous fear and proxy wars and disturbances. And that keeps the people as well generally scared and concerned and distracts them. So you're going to see more and more of that, but not the big one. I suspect not.
Okay. Trump again, his appointments so far, what are you making them?
Yeah, I mean, he's aggressive. He's obviously ruffling a hell of a lot of feathers. I think it's great. I mean, when he won, I said, look, it's not going to completely change our world, but we get 4 years of respite to continue to fight against this monster we have in the West, primarily. And it's great to see he's beginning to go through the motions of doing what he kind of said. I love the DOGE, Department of Government Efficiency. I mean, Musk in there. And I think that's genuine. That's not controlled opposition. That's genuine stuff. So it's fantastic to see RFK Jr., very controversial to put him in the health kind of ministry or whatever. And that's fantastic. That's going to, I think the pharma share price has dropped across the board a good chunk when he got in. So it's going to be great to watch, because even if there's an element of controlled opposition and they have to clip their own wings a little, imagine Harrison and Biden got back in for another 4 years. I mean, I don't know if we'd ever recover. And I think Elon Musk was absolutely correct. He said if they get in for another 4 years, we realistically won't be finished having elections in the future. More years would allow them to sew the whole thing up.
So, he did that on the Rogan. He did that on the Rogan show, didn't he? He looked right down the barrel of the camera, like I'm talking to you, and he said that. It's quite powerful, I thought.
Oh yeah, and their campaign was very effective. They didn't fall for any of the distractions from the Democrat communists, and they won big. They won so big that election fraud was out of the question this year. There were so many eyes on it. So many law or cases in law ready to roll, and so much sunlight that they couldn't have done fraud anyway, like the ballot stuffing and all the other stuff, which quite likely happened in 2020. And so it was really, I guess, democracy kind of worked somewhat.
Yeah.
And that was nice to see, because I nearly gave up on it.
Yeah, it was nice to see. I agree with you. Though in saying all that, you know, he has his first meeting with Biden in the Oval Office, and Biden's like quite chipper. What have they got him on now? Either he's been making more sense, or his stream of consciousness is more sort of together than it ever was. Biden, I'm talking about. But anyway, he says we'll have a smooth transition. Then a day later, he's authorizing the use of ATACMS, and now the UK storm shadows. So they're setting him up for what, do you think?
Yeah, that one, I mean, my wife was looking up all that stuff, and I said, look, don't pay too much attention. It's theater. I mean, Putin had to come out and say, look, if a non-nuclear power uses blah, 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 enemy weapons on our soil, we treat it as a nuclear power. And he had to do that. So this is more chess gaming. But I don't think anything will really happen. Biden, I think, and I suspect, is the so-called, quote, deep state, and all the bad guys we know about, they tell him what to do. So he might go off the script, if you will, and he might say something negative about Harris like he did, or he kind of fingered her a month ago, I think. He said, well, she was part of every decision we made, which was a way of undermining Harris, actually, because she was trying to deny that she was in any way responsible for the outrageous last 4 years. So he might go off script a little bit here and there, but at the end of the day, when the big boys tell him what to say, he comes out and says it. I mean, he would have no power of resisting that. Forget about it.
Well, I imagine there are plenty of things that they could allude to that he wouldn't want out in the public if he wasn't cooperating right now.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting one, because I used to be quite, what's the word? I was skeptical that they had stuff on these people, like celebrities and, you know, politicians. And I figured it was mostly that these people were wetting their beaks, feeding at the trough. Powerful big organizations were coming, looking for their help, or flying them to Davos with wine and caviar and champagne and saying how important it is, this strategy and blah, blah. I thought they were useful idiots mostly. Increasingly, I suspect that quite a few of them, yeah, they have compromising information about them, which is very easy for intelligence services to get.
Yeah.
And a lot of these politicians, let's be honest, especially in the last 50 years, a lot of them are kind of scumbags. I mean, they're just greedy scumbags.
No, really?
Look at
Really?
Yeah, but I'm you shocked. Know, I mean, the money's too big. I mean, the lady I saw in the documentary 15 years ago said when she got into Congress, an old guy just told her, just remember in Congress, the key thing, always lean to the green. Yeah. And she said he didn't mean environmental. Yep. No. So they make so, and you know, Nancy Pelosi is on $200,000 a year, whatever. What's and she's worth, whatever, 20 million.
Yeah.
So I thought a lot of it was just feeding their faces. But they're not good people, and not good people often have something in their past that really good intelligence services will get, document, and then basically wave in their face. There's a possibility that some people are set up also, you know, with hidden cameras, with sex stuff. Mm. You know, I wouldn't rule that out now. I think it's a chunk of it in there.
Wow. Okay, I'm closer to where you are now, observing it across the Irish Sea, let's say, if you're in a position to do that right now, looking out your window. The latest protests by UK farmers in London, the UK inheritance tax on farmers is the big thing, but we spoke to one of the organisers. The other thing is it feels like there's a war on them and food. So is this part of a bigger picture? This is happening in the UK, but you know, farmers around the world, the Western countries anyway, are kind of feeling the same thing. So what do you make of what is going on in the UK at the moment and how far it goes and what it says about the future of this current government? What do you reckon?
Yeah, so Starmer was on the record many years ago, even before the COVID nonsense, and he was asked by a reporter, well, which would you choose to kind of follow or engage with, Westminster or Davos? And he said, oh, Davos, they get things done. So he was on the record saying he put a private corporatist, technocratic, whatever you want, totalitarian group ahead of his own parliament, which technically is treason, but he said it. And wow, that was it. So Starmer is simply aggressively rolling out the diagram that I shared over a year ago now. And the diagram, I'll just describe it briefly. In the middle is globalist, quote, utopia, like just what they want. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then I have out on the outer edges diagram, I've got the COVID-19 program, because that's what it was a program, the gender war and all the sex stuff and trans, climate CO2, net zero, financial CBDC, education and children, mass migration, anti-meat propaganda, and war on farmers. So all of these are strategies towards achieving one world government and full control. And it's not a conspiracy theory at all, because it's our noses are being rubbed in it. So on the war on farmers and the anti-meat propaganda, I just have the lines and arrows drawn, like the mechanisms. So it's to create dependency, very important, replace real food with a pipeline of corporate worldwide shipped processed junk food. And that weakens people physically, increases chronic disease, and weakens them mentally, generally. And it also creates dependency. And this is really important, as some people miss it. It's very hard to get a one world government if all the countries in Europe had their own meat, fish and eggs and healthy foods. It gives them a resilience. You can squeeze them, but at the end of the day, they can just fall back on their own thing. You don't want that. So you want to take away their energy and their food, give them electric carts that you can switch off, and give them a pipeline of processed junk food, which makes them sick and weak. And you can also switch that off if a country is problematic. So these are self-evident strategies that are largely documented by them, but they always pretend it's to save granny or save the planet and all this nonsense. But they're clear as day. It's to weaken society. And anti-meat propaganda is very important. They've allied with a 100-year-old, very active, very large vegetarian, vegan, semi-religious movement, you know, and taking away meat takes away local, high nutrient density, high value foods that anyone can grow locally. But also we evolved as a species, Homo sapiens. Any paleoanthropologist will tell you this. It's not a secret. Homo sapiens evolved through scavenging organ meats and carcasses and then became the most successful hunters on the planet. So for millions of years, meat is the super food of our species. And if you take away the key superfood of a species, well, guess what?
Yeah.
It goes towards weakening that species, of course.
Okay. Boy. Also, it's that. All right. Do you think Starmer, his government, will survive?
Yeah, I don't follow the local politics too closely. I try and stay big picture. That's why
he's so unpopular. He's so unpopular.
He is, but it's like I give an analogy as an example. In corporate world, I learned over many decades, if you're in with the big men or women, but it was mostly men, if you're in with the director and the general manager and the vice president team in corporate back in the US, if you're in with them, you can handle any amount of hatred from your colleagues, from your even your employees directly in your employment. I used to have up to 20 engineers. And I just learned this over time, that even though it's anathema to us to be hated by the people we're serving or managing, at the end of the day, if you don't give a damn, and if you're being looked after by the top of the chain, you can just weather it. And that's what he's doing. Ardern in New Zealand. Now, unfortunately, she had people behind her, which is shocking to us, but she somehow managed it with the COVID nonsense. But eventually, I think the stress got to her. But Starmer, I can tell by looking at him, he doesn't care. He is a made man in the mafiosa. And like our Prime Minister, Leo Varadkar, when the heat got high and eventually they realized people hated him, and he did too, and the game was up, he just quietly walked away and was replaced. No election, just replaced with another thug. And that thug now, Harris, is coming out with his nonsense. And his day will come when the people will slowly realise he's an absolute scumbag. And then he will say, I'm resigning. And another thug will come in. So I guess that could happen to Starmer. But, you know, they'll just move another absolutely corrupt deck chair on the Titanic into place, I guess.
Do you remember, just we've got to wrap up real soon because of time, but do you remember that series, or it was a series from the early 80s called Whoops Apocalypse?
I remember the name and it was famous. I never actually watched it.
You just reminded me of a scene, or is an ongoing gag, where they had, you know, the British Foreign Minister and then also the US Secretary of State, progressive meetings with the Premier, you know, the top Soviet, the president of the Soviet Union. And the running gag was that, you know, the guy would turn his head, and while he wasn't looking behind the desk, the Soviet premier would have a heart attack. He'd be wheeled out. And another one, an identical, you know, suit was wheeled in. And then the guy turned back around and it was just like a different guy, but he looked the same, and they just carried on talking. And they went,
That's it. They wheel one scumbag out and they wheel in another scumbag. But, you know, in Ireland, there's a big rise in independent politicians because quite a lot of people have realised the two parties that are supposedly in opposition to each other. In Ireland, it's really hilarious. Since COVID, they are co-leading the country. The two traditional, used to pick Fianna Fáil or you were a Fine Gael man or woman. Yeah. And now for the last many years, they've given up all pretense and they're just running the government together.
It's the uniparty thing, right?
The uniparty. And then you have Sinn Féin, which was the traditional rebel party, you know, of the Troubles in the North and the IRA. And they are worse than the other guys. They're mega woke. They actually shouted from the opposition benches during COVID demanding more restrictions, right? And Ireland was the most locked down country in Europe. They were demanding more. And the leader of the party, her brother, or maybe it's her husband or herself, I can't remember exactly, they're into a key pharmaceutical company, right? Shareholders and engaged. I mean, the whole thing is, it's just absurd. But more and more people are waking up. And even if an independent vote, you know, doesn't have as much effect as the party vote. People are beginning more and more to pick independents. Just anything, anything but the Davos-led puppets that we have.
All right, Ivor Cummins, great to catch up. Thanks for your report again, and maybe we'll talk before the end of the year. Let's see. Thanks for beaming in, Ivor.
Excellent, Paul. Good luck.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.